like you to blow the roof off of this place. How about it? I mean, I was thinking, this is a real toe tapper. And I can move if you want to do the same. Okay. Ready? When you hear the words, you can begin singing. Ready? Okay, good. Hearts not be hardened. To those living on the margin, there is room at the table for everyone. This is where it all begins. This is how we gather in. There is room at the table for everyone. We have wandered, burdened and undone. There is room at the table for everyone. Let us, it all begins. Let us soon the new world in. There is room at the table for everyone. There's room for us all, and no gift is too small. There is room at the table for everyone. There is enough if we share. Come on, pull up a chair. There is room at the table for everyone. No matter who you are, no matter where you're from, there is room at the table for everyone. Here and now we can be the beloved community. There is room at the table for everyone. Amen. At our table, we are fortunate, so fortunate, to have three presenters who will enrich our lives. And in planning the conference, we wanted to honor the mind, body, and soul, addressing the topic of trauma from a theoretical perspective and an experiential somatic one. And our interest groups reflect our intention as well. So I'd like to, I will be introducing Joe and Noel, Joe Weldon and Noel White. Lorraine will introduce Bessel van der Kolk, who will share tonight and tomorrow. So, Joseph Weldon, known affectionately as Joe, and Noel White are co-founders of the Somatic Therapy Center in Philadelphia. They are trained practitioners of 30 years treating trauma from a somatic perspective. And I think you can tell from my face how happy I am they're here. They have developed the art of transformative touch, which focuses on the innate wisdom of the body as a path to healing and wholeness. Their extensive background and experience in administering transformative touch, excuse me, confirms their belief that the body is the best resource. Your body is where your emotions live, your thoughts occur, your soul dwells, and your wisdom abides. They'll be presenting tomorrow afternoon, and at that time, I'll share more of the story of how I came to know Joe and Noel, and certainly more about their background. You were given index cards. Some of you have index cards, I hope. We have some over here as well. And our thinking was that while you're listening to Bessel, if you have a thought that you want to write down or something, and we'll give those to him at the end of his session to see if he gets a sense of what your interest is. So just know that when he's speaking, that's an option for you. So, Lorraine?
Okay. So, the Friends Conference on Religion and Psychology it has had a long-standing interest in C.G. Jung and the contributions of in-depth psychology to the spiritual quest. Bessel van der Kolk is a scientist, a psychiatrist, and a neurobiologist whose life's work and best-selling book examine the nature of and healing of trauma. So how do these pieces fit together? When the Jungian analyst Donald Kowshed spoke to this conference in 2013, he used fairy tales to explain what happens in trauma. A piece of the soul gets split off and imprisoned in the psyche, out of the reach of consciousness so that it can never be heard again. Rapunzel is locked away from life at the top of a stairless tower. It is a fairy tale hero's job to go after what is missing or lost, down dark passages, over walls into the witch's garden, through magical forests, or aboard ships across misty seas. His search must be for something the world does not value. A fragment of fine cloth, a jar of spring water, a brass key. But he's different from those who went before him and failed. A real hero puts his ego aside and listens to his heart. He is not above taking the advice from unlikely sources, trolls, foxes, talking cats, or hairy men who've come up from the bottom of a pond. As a psychiatrist working with Vietnam vets in late 1970s, Bessel van der Kolk discovered that even though soldiers could talk about their time in battle, they remained imprisoned by unchanging emotional patterns and often addictive behavior. The real pain of trauma had been locked away. Talk therapy could not get near what was hijacking their lives. Dr. van der Kolk spent the next four decades studying this phenomenon and the work of other trauma researchers to find a way into the forest, so to speak, with, of course, hopes of charting a way back for his patients. In the 1990s, he began to use new brain imaging technology to quite literally see how the brain responds to the visceral memory of trauma. What he and his colleagues saw was that the deep limbic or animal brain lit up with activity on the scans, even as the cerebral cortex, the part of the brain that allows us to make lists and plans, showed little or no activity. If post-traumatic stress disorder causes dissociation, Dr. van der Kolk tells his readers, the goal of treatment was association, integrating the cutoff elements of the trauma into the ongoing narrative of life so that the brain can recognize that that was then and this is now. But how to do that? A Jungian might say, well, this is where the magic happens. Deborah Hughes, a longtime member of this conference who has studied with Bessel, put it this way. Speaking of two past speakers, Robert Bly and Marion Woodman, she told me, Robert and Marion helped me understand that what happened to me was written in my body, Deborah said, but they didn't tell me how to fix it. Bessel has given me a roadmap through the body that I can follow back to wholeness and health. The way back to integration through the body is as arduous a journey as any hero faces. The way back to integration through the body is as arduous a journey as any hero faces. Neural circuitry, what Quakers and Jungians might call paths of light and energy in the body, which have been shut down, must be rebuilt through non-intellectual experience. Bessel will tell us about some of the methods he has found to be effective, such as EMDR, eye movement desensitization, reprocessing, trauma-sensitive yoga, neurofeedback, the practice of mindful meditation, and the role of play of internal family systems. And, of course, our plenary speakers, Joe Weldon and Noelle White, will teach us about their lifelong work in somatic therapy. And it is hoped that most of us will get to experience one of these in our interest groups. But elemental to all of these approaches is the rule of witness, which shares an affinity with Quaker witness. Again, Bessel writes, sounding very much like a Quaker Jungian, being fully, feelingly, and non-judgmentally present for another's painful experience, this physical attunement to a trauma survivor's pain sets the stage for transformation. Well, you Jungians know that that's... And here it is where the magic comes in. The chemistry of loving witness supports the trauma victim as he or she begins to build new synapses, what might be called rewiring the brain to connect to, reconnect to what's been lost. The brass key opens a treasury. And finally, a quote from Jung, which Dr. Vanderkolt cites in The Body Keeps the Score, Brain, Mind, and Body in the Healing of Trauma. That's his, I have to say, wonderfully, beautifully written, masterful collation of both his work and the state-of-art research in the field of trauma, which I really can't, if you haven't read it yet, I can't recommend it more highly. But back to the quote from Jung, and what happens when the brass key fits the lock. It is not that something different is seen, but one sees differently. It is as though the spatial act of seeing were changed by a new dimension. That is what we are undertaking this weekend. We are very happy to welcome.
Hi. Usually when I talk to people, I sort of have a particular audience, like school teachers or yoga teachers or neuroscientists. Never talked to Quakers before. In fact, I used to go to the Quaker meeting a lot in Cambridge, and I never talked because God somehow never spoke through me. I just sat in silence and enjoyed the fire together. And then my son went to Cambridge French School, and I sat there for an hour during the graduation. Everybody sat in total silence, and I silently cursed the Quakers until my son got up and broke the silence and got everybody to talk. See, how many people have read my book, actually, in this room? Wow. I have nothing to add. I mean, let's go straight to these guys who work for the body. They're much better. How many people are school teachers by origin, or professors, teachers type people? Who are any mental health professionals by background? A lot of you. Okay. Any, I know it met at least one body person. Any other body people? Like, oh, quite a few. Interesting. Now, it's intriguing to me because I usually talk to therapists, and I'm becoming more and more aware that about 3/4 of the things that have to do with healing from trauma is not sitting on your butt and talking about how badly you feel. But once you get trained in talking, that's what you do. Yeah? And you try to do things in explanation. So I thought I'd say a little bit about how I got into this. And that is the opening chapter of my book, actually. But I didn't tell my own personal thing there. It started off... it's interesting. Enter that story also. It started off with, I started my first day in the VA, and people had warned me about working at the Veterans Administration. They say, everybody goes there in order to get government benefits. And I went to work for the VA to pay for my psychoanalysis, and so I went for the same reason. I said, I'll fit right in because I'm going to work at the VA also for my benefits, and I expected a few years of complete hardship. And what actually happened is I fell in love with these soldiers. I was a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War. I worked for the Friends Service Committee in Hawaii, where I was living at the time, and hang out with you guys. And so my father was in a concentration camp because he was very vocal about Nazis and was also a conscientious objector. And so I didn't expect much from the VA. And I love these soldiers. And the first guy I met, so many of you have read this by now, is a guy who told me how his dad had fought for Patton in the Second World War, the Battle of the Bulge, which was one of the early things that I used to hear about as a kid. And he said his father would only talk about his dead comrades who he lost in that battle, and he would pay no attention to his kids. And he felt he was never good enough. And he was a brilliant kid, did very well in high school. So he joined the Marines in order to prove to his dad that he was worthy of his love. And then the same thing happened to him in Vietnam as it happened to his own dad. And he also came home and also could only think about the dead guys he'd left behind. And I was an optimistic young guy, very much in love with the new pharmacological revolution. And I had studied nightmares. And I said, I can give you some great drugs to make your nightmares go away. And the opening sentence of my getting involved in this work was when he came back and said, I did not want to take your medications. And as a good doctor, if you have defiant patients, you get mad at them and do nasty things in return. And I said, why not? He said, because I realized that I need to be a living memorial to my friends who died in Vietnam. And that was the opening line. And I said, I will study this for the rest of my life. That people get stuck in the past out of love and loyalty. And boy, do we see this in incest survivors, child abuse survivors, how at the core of so much of what we do is our community. And oftentimes the worse our community treats us, the more attached we get to them. People are a little bit like dogs. The worse you treat them, the more they will suck up to you. And getting trapped in the old stuff is very big. It also was, so I think, the first thing I remember as a kid. So my dad was a very devout Christian, and he was in a concentration camp, and then he came back, and he was a very harsh guy with his kids in many ways, in some ways. And he had a motto that said, obedience without talking back. And I must have been 3 years old when I said to my dad, you just came out of the concentration camp for people who said obedience without talking back. And now you're behaving like a Nazi with your own kids. So that was sort of my youth, is to argue with my dad about these sort of issues. And it all came back to life when I met these veterans. And then I slowly got to really be intrigued with how people survive. And for me, what's been the most interesting part about doing this work is that there's a lot of talk about resilience. And what people don't realize is that everybody who has been traumatized is resilient in their own way. Every story that people tell me, I go, oh my God, I have no idea how I would have coped with that. I don't think I would have done as well as you did. You have only made 15 suicide attempts. I bet I would have made 25 suicide attempts if I'd gone through what you have gone through. So I got very intrigued with the issue of survival and the human spirit and how people go on. And what you meet when you meet trauma is the life force. This amazing thing that makes people want to do things and all of the complexity of it all. And then there's a cultural phenomenon. And that is, and I think to my mind, the Quakers are among the very few people who actually used to talk about it. I don't know if you still talk about it. But we are a profoundly militarized country. And almost nobody discusses that. The defense budget went up another God knows how many billions of dollars again. When we have a larger army than the 14 next armies in the world combined, 12 of which are our friends. So what the hell is going on that we keep invading other countries to bring stuff there, our blessings to other countries? I went to school at the University of Chicago, in the South Side of Chicago, and to my mind, the South Side of Chicago continues to, I've been to Calcutta and to Tanzania and to Cairo and many miserable places in the world. The South Side of Chicago, to my mind, continues about the most inhuman place that I've ever been to. And so we're filled with our own trauma, but we keep sort of having a military that keeps invading other countries. And that sort of it pervades how we look at the world. So all the money that goes into treating trauma basically goes to the military. But the sad thing is, there are any veterans here in this room? Quaker veterans. That's some. And people would say, Nixon was a Quaker. So when people say, people get such terrible treatments at the VA, or they cannot get in, my reaction is, thank goodness they can't get in, because they would probably really mess with them and do a terrible job. So we spent all that money on treatment, and they get terrible treatment because it has become an industry. And so all this money goes into the military, all this money goes into the treatment of people who got wounded by the war, but it isn't working. And for every soldier who gets traumatized in the war, there's at least 30 children in at home who get traumatized by their own parents. And that is something that we continuously don't want to pay attention to. So that's sort of the preamble.